And at this time, it's my real pleasure to be able to introduce to you Father Vaughn.
The sun maketh the clear blue sky, the rose maketh the butterfly, the morning dew may kiss the grass, and you, my friends, I consider class. Boy. Now, I really don't know. Honest to gosh, I really don't know where I am. I speak a little bit funny as if I say the word out about our house. Everybody always asks me, where do you come from? And my real home is Montreal, Canada. And they said, oh, geez, up in Canada, all they got is loose-living women and hockey players. I say, watch it, Mac. My 86-year-old mother lives in Montreal. Yeah, what team does she play for, right? But Putt picks me up this afternoon and brings me to the hotel and hands me this magazine. And I said, how many people are around here? He tells me. I said, well, I get a little bit nervous. And here it is. This is it. It's in your hotel room. If you don't think I'm telling the truth, go upstairs and check it. Travel Post, y'all got one of these? You're staying here, right? Speech anxiety common among even the most accomplished speakers. This is how you get rid of speech anxiety. Winston Churchill said that he used to calm his nerves before speaking by thinking of his audience sitting in their underwear. Now, do you know how ridiculous you look? See, I think, I don't know what Putt was trying to do to me, but I really feel pretty secure. Because Putt has to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive me back at the airport because I have to get back to Detroit to catch another plane to go play hockey on our hockey team, which I'll talk about. But the wives were very charitable. They went out and bought some alarm clocks. Golfers' alarm clocks, that's an in-joke, and since I'm being taped, I'm not going to explain it to you, but it's sure to work. It's a little candle that you put someplace in the anatomy, and when the candle burns down to the right hour which you've marked, the person automatically wakes up. So use your imagination. So I feel sure he's going to be up knocking on my door here because he already had to wake me up once today. But yeah, my name is Father Vaughn, or Father, yeah, that's my name, Father Quinn, Father Vaughn, and I am an alcoholic. And that's why I'm here. And I really think this is a fantastically good turnout. My God, over 500 people for your first time at this part of the state, you're really to be commended on that. And what we will talk about is all the different aspects of AA, of recovery, and especially to the new people that are here, the people that are just in the program a short time. You are the most important people in this room, and everything I say tonight will be stolen right out of this book. In case you haven't seen this. This is called a big book, okay? Because when I was locked up in a Twitch farm, and that's how I got in AA, because the nurse said to me, oh gosh, she was a lovely lady. I can't even remember her name, but she was great. She's very talented. This was a nut house, and talented. Hell, she played defensive end with the Chicago Bears for 8 years. And she said, the doctor thinks you should go to an AA meeting tonight in the hospital. I said, what? Me? A Catholic priest with 7 degrees and the holy oils of ordination hardly dried on my hands? Because I'd already been there. I hadn't even been ordained a year. And I said, oh, gosh, I can't go there. Those drunks. Go a bunch of drunks and get help. I said, nurse, go on upstairs and have some shock treatment. I think you've had a psychotic break. And then I said, being a con artist, I said, will that help me get out of the hospital? And she said, yes, it will. I said, I'll go. I would have gone to Child Molesters Anonymous that night if I thought that was the way out of the hospital. But somebody had given me one of these books, not this one because this is a new one, and said, read it. And I said, geez, I got degrees in ontology and epistemology and cosmology. I can't read all this stuff. So I just threw it on my bedside table there in the nut house and left it there. Now, this was in Dyer, Indiana, And the alcoholic stayed in that nut house 14 days, and then they left. Now, I stayed there 6 months. And so they were coming back in for the second and third time, being carried in, and I'm still there. And they're carried in loaded, saying, "Holy cadoodle, Quinn, you're still here? Boy, you're really sick." So I went back to my room and checked in the big book, you know, discharged from a nut house, you know. How to get out of a twitch farm, you know, and that's when I started reading the big book. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, in all earnestness. Now, there are 45 pages in this book, and here they are. Page 58 to 103. Now, if I was to go to the American Cancer Foundation and say, I have 45 pages, if the people suffering, whoever ever had to suffer from cancer, and all of the families with them, and all the human suffering, and broken dreams, and broken homes, and wasted carnage, and all the billions of dollars, I guarantee if people would live by what's prescribed there, never again would they ever have to suffer any of the deleterious effects of cancer. You know, I could sell those pages for about, oh God, $10 zillion. Well, there are 45 pages in this book, page 58 to 103, that absolutely guarantee, on page 83, that the alcoholic and the person living with the alcoholic, the Al-Anon, I hope there's some good Al-Anon members here tonight, you know, because it takes a smart woman to see through her husband, but a good woman to see her husband through. Well, I always say that and get some friends, you know. Con. But that's true. It's a family illness, family illness, family disease. No, like, okay. But if the people will live by what is prescribed in these pages, absolutely guaranteed, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that never again would they have to suffer any of the ravages of what alcoholism is. And I'm not talking about broken fenders and turned over auto cars and burned down. I'm talking about the real spiritual ravages, the complete loss of dignity, the complete loss of self-worth, the complete loss of any enthusiasm for life, the complete loss of self-respect, the complete loss of hope, the complete loss of faith, of love, all of those things, completely, spiritually bankrupt. Guaranteed. Never again would they have to suffer those things, but they could live a very enthusiastic life. You know, they should. Everybody should be reading these pages every day because they're, I believe, divinely inspired, and that you can read them all the time and still see something. You see, mine's been read a little bit, and I still read them, and I go, "Holy cadoodle, Vaughn, how come you're still sober? You know, you haven't done that in a little bit of time. Huh? I haven't seen that." You know, and I underline something else. And the funny thing is, in the business, you know, and that is my business, is in alcohol rehabilitation and doing an awful lot of AA responsibility things, which is the capacity to say yes to life, that I find maybe about 8%. See, I got a lot of people coming back to me. I run a little treatment center in Detroit that I started 23,000 alcoholics ago. So I get a lot of people coming back to me, right? And they keep saying, "Father," and they're half in the bag, "I was the best 12-stepper in my group, and I had a slip. I don't know what happened, I was just slip." And now they're half in the bag, and they're saying, "I don't know what could have gone wrong." And I say, "Well, what's the 12th step?" And they say, "Saving other drunks." I say, "No, it is not." "Working with other alcoholics." I say, "No, it is not." "Rescuing other alcoholics." I say, "No, it is not." "Carrying the meds." I said, "That's a third of it." I said, "Where's your big book?" "Oh, my big book, I gave it to my first pigeon 8 years ago when he got out of the hospital because he needed it more than I did." So I said, "What's the 12th step?" "Well, okay." So we turn to page 60. "Having had a spiritual awakening." Goes, "Oh, geez, here we go. I knew you'd do it to me. You priests are all the same. You know, here we go. Bible thumping to me with the spiritual part of the program. You know, all of this stuff." And I'm saying, "Oh, my gosh, you know." I say, "Well, what is the spiritual awakening? Did you ever have one?" He says, "No, I looked all over for God and I couldn't find him. I looked all over for him and I never saw him. I saw a few little green men up in the ceiling." I said, "Well, did you take your third step with another understanding person?" He goes, "What? What are you talking about?" I said, "Hey, turn to page 63. We found it desirable to take this spiritual step with another understanding person The wording, of course, was quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. That means using the voice, right? The larynx and making voice. Because alcoholics and Al-Anon and a lot of people in the world, kind of like imminent action, you know. It means the idea starts in your head and it ends in your head and no one ever has to know what goes on. Kind of Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Right? And you never have to put your money where your mouth is. Right? But this is an action program. It's not a program of ideas. It's a program of ideas, then at L for love, which means action. And so it comes that we have to put our money where our mouth is and say, hey, this is how I'm going to live. Here's the measuring stick. And when I'm not living up to these standards, as I said I would, as they're prescribed in the internalization of the 12 steps of AA, well, then someone should be able to check me up on that. Guy says, I didn't do that. I say, well, did you write your 4-step? Oh, geez, don't write your 4-step. God, if you write your 4-step, you get drunk with all that negative stuff. You know? And it's only about 13 times, you know. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. That's once. On our grudge list, that's twice. Referring to our list again, that's 3 times. We place them before us in black and white. That's 4 times. I said, we place them before us in black and white. I had a guy drunk in my office once, half in the bag again, who said, that doesn't mean write it down. So I said, oh, it doesn't. So I let him keep talking, and then I practiced my banjo chords or something till I saw his lips stop. And I said, you finished? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, turn the page. Next page. We set them on paper. Page 68. I said, now tell me that doesn't mean write it. Well, yeah, we set them on paper. Page 69. We got this all down on paper and looked at it. 13 times it's written in here. Set them on paper. Look it down. Write it down. Oh, yeah, and here's the other one. Well, haven't taken my 4-step yet. Don't know if I'm ready for it yet. Don't know if I've been in long enough yet. How long have you been in? 18 years. Well, my sponsor said that you got to be really comfortable. Page 64. 2 words that tell you when to take the 4-step. At once. No, okay, I was saying this funny, but we're talking about life and death. You see what the problem is, as I see it, is I go all over the country doing AA talks. I just did one down in McAllen, Texas or something. You know, and I come into McAllen, Texas, and I go, hey, yippee, boy, is this ever a neat spot? How's everybody in McAllen, Texas? We're okay. What's happening here in this city? It's really nice. Nothing. Well, what do you do for excitement? I mean, to make life enthusiastic. Nothing. Well, do you go to AA meetings? Yeah. Well, what else do you do? Nothing. Well, why don't you? We're alcoholics. Shoot them! You know, this is not a book on alcoholism. It's a book on a way of life, to be a better way of life. You know, when we drank, we thought, boy, that was really where it was at. You know what I mean. You couldn't dance worth a darn, but you had 3 drinks, and you made Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire look like they had, you know, total paralyzed, right? Very shy with the girls, and 3 more drinks, and you were throwing more passes than Joe Namath ever threw in a football career. Couldn't drive, well, you know, 5 drinks, you drove the car like Parnelli Jones, you know, geez, easy. Even after I was ordained, I had a bottle of Hagen Haig. I preached a sermon, I'd make Fulton Sheen look like he had a speech impediment, right? Everything worked better. Everything. Well, you know, we really wrote a symphony that's proved which Mozart wrote one without a soul, and boy, it was all great. Then the funny ha-has turned into funny peculiars, and the funny peculiars turned into darn tragedy, and the bottom fell out of our world, and now we have sobriety, a gift from God. And I really mean that. I don't know of one person. I live in the 3rd largest county of the United States of America, Wayne County, where 0.88% of the alcoholics are getting help tonight. That means 99.2 are continuing in the progression of the worry and the anger and the self-pity and the depression and the lies and the hostility and the hostility and the hate and the revenge and the total stripping of any spiritual values, total stripping of any sense of dignity, of divine origin, of fun, or of anything. And how come you and I are in this room tonight? Because of some great thing, I don't know, great idea that we had, that I ever said, Vaughn, you better stop drinking? I never said that in my life. They locked me up. Now, I'm a religious Catholic priest of an order. That's much, you know, that means you got a father provincial, a big provincial. If he says, Beirut, you go. So he sits me down. It takes me 8 years to get ordained as an Oblate Father. It's 363 days later. I mean, I was just getting ready to celebrate my first anniversary when they nailed me. And this guy sits me down because all my friends went to him. And he read out this tremendous act of all of the things that I had been doing. Now, poor Father Koozie Bear, I mean, he's a big guy, right? I used to call him Koozie Bear, Father Kuzno. And he's reading this thing out, and I can see the palpitation of his heart. He's almost in white shock, right? I mean, for a religious priest, it was only ordained a year, and this is what you know what I said? Whew, is that all he knows? Those amateurs all go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. They didn't know what went on after that. So I said, he says, you're going away, you're sick. I said, gladly, I'll go away. I copped, I said, yeah, I'll go away for 5 days. You know, and I'll come back in Canada, I'll get a boat, and I'll be a missionary to the Indians out in B.C. I stayed away 57 weeks. Not by choice, they just didn't unlock the door. Huh? I never said, hey, I think I'm drinking too much. Hell, no, there was nothing off. Even when they locked me up, I said, oh, my parishioners, they're just a little overreacting to my apostolic zeal. They don't know the fervor I have to stay out all night. We had a brother wake us up. I used to meet him every morning. I mean, a little walk before breakfast. I'd go up 4 days straight. It was great. Now all of them, and then the tragedies happened, and now we have sobriety. You and I have sobriety, and the Al-Anon families, too. And the Al-Anons have a freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. And unless that sobriety becomes more meaningful, more purposeful, more rich, more fulfilling, with a greater zeal, with a greater enthusiasm for life, with a greater self-acceptance, with a greater love of self, with a greater freedom to be yourself, with more purpose of life, so that you can really see the picture as God painted it, unless it has all of those great things happening in it, you're going to get bored. You're going to say, is this all there is? Is this all I'm bored? And then we know how to do to change our feelings. We know what to do to change the way we feel. See, I know a lot of people come to AA, and they think AA means, you know, go in, listen to a drunk log, drink a cold coffee, eat a hard donut, and by damn, they better get me well. It means an awful lot more than that. And that's what I really want to deal on. As I go all over, you know, I'm saying, here we are. You know, people were given a second chance in life for living on a daily reprieve with all of the tools of happiness, a way of life that brings happiness, that brings joyfulness, that brings enthusiasm, that brings zest for life. I mean, so many people say, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what to do. You got a job yet? No. Why not? The higher power hasn't given me one yet. What? Me work? Hell, let my wife work. My sobriety comes first. Who's dealing? Anyway.
I know guys go to 19 AA meetings a week just to get out of the house. You know. That's not what this program's about. This is not a course on alcoholism. I could stand here tonight and talk to you for 5 straight hours of what happens when a monoamine oxidizing inhibitor gets ingested into your liver that has an extraordinary compound of alcohol dehydrogenase, which causes the oxidation of alcohol into acetaldehyde, acetic acid, carbon dioxide, water, and the mitochondria in the cells in your liver where the norepinephrine and serotonin accumulate in levels of the brain which cause euphoria and die drunk tomorrow. It's not what we know. But you people don't give a damn what I know. But you don't even care what I know. But you'd like to know how much I care. Big difference. Big difference. And I'm not here to put on a show.
Now, that's my one prayer I make when I'm coming into the room. Quinn, you are not there to put on a show. Now, there's people here, you know, and especially the young people in the program, the people just coming in, you know, are screaming for a little something to believe in, a little something to hope in, and something to love. And that's really what we're all looking for. And the only way they're going to get it, you know, is through other people in AA and the internalization of the book. Yeah, the going to meetings is very, very important. Very, very important. It cannot be had any other way. And then the internalization of the steps. What's happening inside Vaughn Quinn in between meetings? What does this step mean to me today? How about brutal honesty with self? How about seeking what God's will is for me? And that's what I want to talk about. Now, what alcoholism is a conflict between behavior and values in the drinker. Is there a conflict between the alcoholic's behavior and the values in the drinker? All right? Now, just to identify, I'm not going to bore you with my drunkologue because it's very, very dull. It took me 8 years to get ordained as the Roman Catholic priest in the Oblate Fathers. 2 days after I was ordained, I was called to say Mass at St. Mary's Hospital for the repose of my father, who had died in 1955. He was the chief surgeon, physician, obstetrics, gynecology for 26 years. Jack Quinn's son's ordained a priest. Go to the Catholic hospital, everybody shows up. You know, 83 nuns, 5,000 people, a bishop, everybody showed up. You know, everybody kissing your hands because you're a newly ordained priest. All of that stuff was going on then. And a day later, I go out to play golf. And I realized I hadn't played golf in 8 years, and I've one very fantastic thing happened to me. I was a very unhappy hooker. But I went back to what my youth was and said, a little pint of Mother Molson's Cure-All, and that's our brewery in Montreal, is all you need to straighten out the hook, and by darn it worked. Straightened out the hook. And that night, being an early ordained priest, everybody's always making a big fuss over you. My sister was throwing a little party for me, and I can remember how irritated I got when Martha, who was my sister, who I just left this morning in Detroit, and she went back to Montreal. And this was in 1965, or 64, 65. And she's serving all these drinks. And then, you know, she comes around, she says, well, is it a time when my glass is empty? Everybody else's glass is full. And she said, is it time for another drink? She said, oh, no, George hasn't finished his drink yet. I said, oh, my God, what the heck does George come here for, you know? Lordy be, my drink. So being an oblate father, trained in the missions, adoptable to any human condition, I volunteered to be bartender. Drove my mother home, who at that time was a widow for 9 years. And she says, aren't you coming? And I said, Mother, a priest is never ordained for his own personal sanctification, but to build the kingdom of God and be about my father's business. I was thirsty. And I knew when it was a good party. And I was on my way to that party, and someone had just lent me a car, so I'm driving out to the party, and I pass Ruby Foo's nightclub, very prominent nightclub in Montreal, where I grew up and hung out when I was an athlete and also working as an account executive and all of those types of things. And I came back to this nightclub, and it was, parking lot's jammed, oh! And I said, my God, how can that place be doing so well without my patronage? There must be a communistic-inspired infiltration movement going on in there, you see. I was thirsty again. I had 10 minutes to go, so I went in. But again, I'm in the province of Quebec, 85% Catholic, but very anti-clerical. But being an oblate father, who is adaptable to any human condition, zing, this comes off that quickly. And the loose flow in the wire and a sport shirt appeared and goes in. And being shy and an introvert, it took me 18 seconds to get something going in there. The next thing I know, I'm lying in a hospital, and the nurse says, don't swear. And I said, oh, spit, they know I'm a priest. And I opened up my eyes, and I'm in the hospital, and I got a big pain in the back of my head. And I finally mustered up enough courage. I said, nurse, what hospital am I in? And she said, St. Mary's Hospital, Father. And that's where I had been 2 days before, zapping everybody with grace. There I was lying in the emergency room with a pain in my head, not knowing that there are 18 stitches in my head, much less how they got there. Now, that's slightly a little bit of a conflict between what I was supposed to be doing as a Roman Catholic priest who had just spent 8 years in a seminary with God's grace to get ordained. A slight conflict. I mean, that was 2 days ordained. Now, the next 300 days it picked up, and I'm not going to bore you with those, with all of that stuff, but I'm just saying that's how I identify. Things began happening in my life which I did not want to happen.
And when you're in the Catholic parish and you've got 900 people waiting for the 9 o'clock Mass and you show up at noon for the 9 o'clock Mass saying you've been on a sick call, well, the fit's going to hit the shin. And it did. And they locked me up. And there I was, God's gift to Christendom with my 7 degrees, ex-pro athlete, millionaire's kid, local boy maid, and there I was, standing in my paper suit. In a honeymoon jacket that didn't close in the back. You always had to walk with your back to the wall. Numbers and a hat in the nut house. Wasn't very funny. Well, we had lots to do. Weave baskets. In fact, I played on a baseball team. The cotton ball was that big, so if you hit somebody, you wouldn't hurt them. I hit that sucker over second base once. I'm running around second base. I met my own teammate coming the other way. Hi, hi. I said, oh, my God, you know. And he was a big guy, too. I'm only a small. I said, if we have a tie at home plate, I'm dead, right? I had lost all privileges as a priest. I couldn't say Mass. I couldn't do anything. So I stayed there 6 months, and that's how I got to AA, because I wanted to get out of there. And then after 6 months there, I went to Guest House, which is a rehabilitation center for Roman Catholic alcoholic priests and brothers in Lake Orion, Michigan. And I stayed there 7 months. So my 5 days amounted to 57 weeks or whatever time. I can't, a little brain damage here, I can't figure it all out. All right? So that qualifies me, and that's what, 18 years ago? Doesn't make any difference how long, you know. It's a one-day-at-a-time program. It's always, you hear those two stories about, you know, the two alcoholics go and they call on a guy still drinking, you know, and they say, oh, come on. He says, how long have you been sober? And one goes, 20 years. And he says, the other guy, how long have you been sober? And the guy says, 2 weeks. My God, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? Right? Getting back to my friend, you see, when I say he's in the bag and he's come to say, well, I've been in AA. I've been the best 12-stepper in my group for 8 years. And I say, well, you know, did you have what is the 12th step? And he thinks it's just saving other drunks. I'm saying, no, it's not. Having had a spiritual awakening. I say, well, what is the spiritual awakening? I don't know. I've looked all over for God. I've looked all over for things. I've just prayed and I've prayed and I've asked God for all kinds of deals. And I held out my hoop and asked him to jump through it. And God, get me out of this jam and this is what I'll do for you. I won't drink for 2 weeks. Didn't work. I said, no, of course it didn't work. Look at the spiritual experience in the big book, page 569. That's a very important number for anybody in Detroit, because my address in Detroit is 569 East Elizabeth. Took me about a day and a half to turn the city around to get that number, but it wasn't that hard. Because that's really what AA and Al-Anon is all about, the spiritual awakening. And William James, the father of American psychology, spells it right out here. It's an educational process. An educational process. From the Latin word educare, which means to lead out of a person. Educare, to lead out of a person a hierarchy of values which was once there, but has gone dead, dormant, asleep, defunct, because of the primary illness, alcoholism, the progression of that primary illness, alcoholism. That's what's robbed people for this enthusiasm of life, for this self-dignity, for this self-worth, for self-preservation, for self-respect, for joy, for laughter. When's the last time you laughed? Remember before you came in AA? Or Al-Anon? You hadn't laughed in years, you know? You hung around for a while, and all of a sudden you went, you mean, oh, my God, what did I do? I laughed. I pulled three muscles in my back. Joy. Imagine if all the joy in the world was dependent on you and I in some days. Whew. And that's what we want to talk about. The spiritual awakening. You know, to get a sense of your dignity. To get a sense of the gifts which you have in you. And that's what's going to be brought about by the 12 steps. You know, AA is an awful lot more than just going to tables and talking about, see, we were all laughing about my drunkalogue that happened 18 years ago. You know, that was 1964. June of 65 is when I had my last drink. That's got nothing to do with what's going on in 83. Nothing. You know, and this is a now program, action-oriented to the future. Now, we want to get well. It's action-oriented to the future. Not living with a drunk log that happens, you know, 5, 10 years, 15 years ago. For God's sake, one thing. When you're at AA tables and when you're at Al-Anon tables, share with people how you're getting well. God, so many young people are coming to AA now just screaming for something to believe in, and we sit there and tell them about a drunk log that happened 15 years ago. Oh, I smashed a car. Oh, I smashed a truck. Oh, geez, that's nothing. I rolled a bus with crippled children in it. Oh, can you top this? That's not what the program's about. That's not it. If you are painstaking with this portion of the program, you will know new freedom, happiness, peace, serenity. Page 80. I'm forgetting that page. I'll find it. But that's it. This is not some type of a masochistic society where we're going to, you know, going to prove to everybody that I'm the most worstest person that ever came on the face of this earth. No, that's not what God created. Right? All right, you got to be, you know, be aware. Okay, page 83. If you are painstaking about this phase of the development, we are going to know freedom, a new happiness, with words serenity, and you will know peace. And that's what's guaranteed in these programs, in these steps, the internalization of the steps. Now, everything I say from now on has been stolen from these pages. Also, everything I say is directly applicable to any alcoholic age 2 or 200, and also to any Al-Anon member, because sometimes I'm giving the AA talk and a person's going,
you didn't do that. You didn't do that. Shut up. You practice your program, I'll practice mine. You take your inventory, I'll take mine. It's your program. You can do it your way.
It's not. You know, some people pick up the book and they read how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who does whatever the heck they want with this program. Only taking to heart those things that are going to be convenient, fitting, and pleasurable for them to do, and of course casting aside anything which might demand a little pain or a little discipline or a little growth. They're sure to get well. Let it all hang out, be comfortable, and enjoy yourself. It doesn't say that. You know, I'm talking about life and death. I am, and it's your life and your death, and it's very, very serious to me. It's the most sacred thing that God's ever given me in life, and I'm putting it in those terms because if I have to tell you the real story, you know, we'd all be here wallowing in the morals of self-pity, because I see, you know, with 23, I have run to my place has, what, over 200 beds in it. My place. Geez, listen to that, you know. The place of which I'm supposed to, I am the director. But then I got 165 people working. They do the work I play. But I see death every week. And I'm going to scare, you know, but, you know, scare tactics don't work. It doesn't say that. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Our path. There is a way of getting well and enjoying it and having fun and joining the party. I don't mean in the sense of a hilarious, you know, knee kafafa, knee slapping, belly laughing 24 hours a day. No. But things start making sense in life. There is a reason to live and a reason to die. And it's brought about when it's, sure, it's an individual program. Sure, it's a selfish program. What that means, if Von Quinn is willing to do the things that are prescribed in this program, go to meetings, read these pages, internalize them every day and say, hey, what does that step mean for me today? What am I really doing about inside? What's my vision of life? How am I relating to other people? The word morality means a journey of recovery in relationship to other people. That's what the fourth step is all about. And I'll talk about that. Doesn't mean that because I'm a priest and because I got all these degrees and because I'm a director of the large center and because, you know, I'm the star of the Flying Father hockey team and because I, you know, do all kinds of, I have 6 fire trucks, 3 St. Bernard dogs and, my God, you know. I don't have to do that. Well, I did that in the seminary. I don't have to do that. Well, I did that in the hospital. Don't have to do that. Well, there's nothing for me to do. Go to the meetings and wait for other people to talk.
That's the loser. The loser at the table goes to the meeting. You know, the winner goes to goes and listens. A loser waits for his turn to talk.
Straighten these people up. All right, so no, I'm not here just to do that. You know, really, it's your life, because I fly home tomorrow, bright and early, and I get my hockey equipment, and away I go to Bloomington, Illinois. No, that's not, I'm not here for, but it's your life, and it's very, very sacred. It's the greatest, you are an irrepeatable mystery of God's creation. The Magnalia Dei. And you know, the tragic thing, the most tragic thing is you don't realize it. You don't know it, and you don't believe it. If I was to give you all a piece of paper and pencil right now and say, write me 10 good things about yourself, you know the saddest thing in the world? There'd be somebody here at dawn tomorrow morning going, oh, I got three. I got three. Does making my bed count? Yeah. Four! Yahoo! I got four! You know, is that what life is about? Is that what life and loving and living and laughing is all about? You know, and that's what's sad when we're given it right here, and the fellowship, and community, and people to serve, and that's the only way you're going to be happy, is to get out of yourself. The biggest pain which you and I have that stops us from living, from loving, from laughing, from growing is self. Analysis all the time. Self-preoccupation. Self-preoccupation. We become so preoccupied with our own little world, eh? Our own little world, and what's going to happen to us, and me, and I. Poor me, I, and we forget. We forget about everything that's going on, and we can't get out of ourselves anymore, and we just get so turned in. And so that's what the steps are for. You know, so that we're going to be able to come alive. That there is hope, that there is joy, that there is fun, that there is a reason to live, that there's purposefulness in life. And that's the only thing I'm trying to, and you can find it right here. And then practice these things in the community. See, the first seven steps are AA, are to find out what makes you tick in a positive way. You know, not, you know, just making my bed down. No. No, you all have, you know, irrepeatable. How come? All of the psychologists today tell us we only develop 10% of our capacity to hear the beautiful music that is around us. We only develop 10% of our capacity to see the beauty that is around us. We only develop 10% of our emotions to respond in a positive way to the situations in which we find ourselves. We only develop 10% of our capacity to love. We only develop 10% of our capacity to laugh, to live, to suffer. With a purpose. How come? It means 90% of it goes undeveloped. That's tragic. And we're given the answers here. Where we can live, you know, live the 90% of it. Get out there and, you know, make life worth living. And the answers are here. And so that's what we want to do. That's what I want you to do. That's, you know, instead of saying, nothing. God. The whole AA program is built that way. You know, the first seven steps. What makes you beautiful? I do AA retreats. I'm going, as soon as I come back from the three hockey games, I take off again the very afternoon and go do an AA retreat. 71 people. And you know, here's the fourth step for those people. What makes you enthusiastic? Answer that. And you'll find out. What's life about? The whole thing in AA is to find out what makes you enthusiastic, what makes you beautiful, what makes you lovable, what makes you nice to be around, what makes you fun, what makes you good things in life, eh? So that you can practice the other five steps, 7 to 12, which means go back into the community of your marriage, of your relationships, of your workplace, your enjoyment place, your leisure place, whatever, and share with other people. Relationship to other people. It's not a me program. You know, the Ten Commandments are pretty direct. You know, they're kind of like, you know, it would be nice if you did these things.
it's kind of like God saying to you, if you love me, would you really please do these things for me? You know, I created you and I'm sustaining you in existence because I love you. And I want you to be able to reflect back the beauty of my creation in the twinkle of your eye. And give a little credit to your mom and dad because, you know, they're the only ones who were around when you had to come into the world and they didn't have a whole hell of a lot to work with either. And kind of what belongs to other people, leave to other people, because if you get sticky fingers, you know, you're going to be in a lot of trouble and it messes up the juridical system and it makes the docs and the files and the court system last forever. You know, and it just gets very messy and, you know. Be darn discreet where you sleep, because that can get tacky as hell, and it can cause all kinds of community relationships, you know, and it's bad, bad news, breaks up all, you know. But this is a lot more direct. A lot more. This is a matter of life and death. I kid you not.
People keep saying, well, how do you do it?
It's no muss in AA. And I go, what? Page 62. We alcoholics must rid ourselves of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. There's two musts in two lines. And we have to have God's help. There's two musts in two lines. When we have to, looking at the wrongdoing of others, financial or real, or that had power to actually kill us, we saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than the alcohol. There's three. Whatever our ideal, not idea. Idea stays up there. Ideal's got an L. Love means action. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. Two more musts in two lines. How many am I at? Five? Okay. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live a long and happy life. Whatever religious denominations we belong to, we must go back to the required or the properly ordained people and whatever that is. We must be hard on ourselves but considerate of others. When we can't find somebody to take the fifth step with, we must not use this as an excuse. Yeah, the fourth step, as I said, page 64, at once. At once after the third step. Immediately. Not 10 years later. Oh, there's a beaut right here. Okay, we must not shrink at anything. We must lose our fear of creditors. Page 85. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. But we must go further, and that means more action. Working with others is an experience we must not lose. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. The person must decide for themselves whether he wants to go on. The desire to find God must come from within. How many am I at? Huh? 14. Eight? 18. All right, you know. And how? As the result of these steps. That's what it says. See, a lot of us think it's as a result, right? A result means a one-time catastrophic, world-shattering, bone-crushing event when Angel Gabriel comes down with his 26-piece orchestra of 8-foot-long trumpets going, da-da-da-da-da! Don't worry, Vaughn, you'll never drink again. See, we all thought that should have happened, right? Doesn't mean that. It says as the, T-H-E, big word. Yeah, you know what it means? That's a heavy word. I didn't know what it meant. When I was in school, I was 32 years old. I didn't know what it meant. It means continuous action all the time. The weekend off and go back on Monday, no. Doesn't mean that. Doesn't mean go 3 months and then, you know, take a little break and get out of town. No, doesn't mean that. It means as the continuous action must be taken. I've just showed you 18 musts. As the result of these steps, all these steps must be internalized. See, what I'm trying to get at is there's so many people who I come across, and I just see is that they're robbing themselves of so much of the vitality of the program, of the zest for living. And we're trying to give a little hope. We're trying to say, hey, there's an awful lot of human suffering going on in the world. It's just tragic, you know, really tragic. And yet you and I, because we've been knocked on our potato, you know, and had a little bit of the ego knocked out of us, and we're given a chance to really start experiencing some quality sobriety, some quality life. And yet, because we're hanging on to a few things, or we think that all I have to do is go to meetings and listen to Drunk Lodge and drink stale coffee and wonder why I'm not feeling any better. And it's got to be through the internalization of the steps, which are all written in the past tense, which means action must be taken. They're not written in the past tense because that's the proper way. And this, again, as I said, everything I say applies to Al-Anon members too, because, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same program. The program can be applied to anybody. The word alcoholic is only in the first step. We're not just talking about being sober. You know, you and I know people that are dry, but still very negative. No, who wants to be negative? Their world vision is very, very negative. I was doing a retreat in, I can't remember, Banff, Alberta. Now that's province of Alberta, Canada. God, is it beautiful, you know. I went up, I did the men's retreat, then I had 2 days off and I was going to do the women's retreat, so I went up to Banff Springs Hotel. In the middle of the Canadian Rockies, 15,000 feet mountains, all snow-capped. It's 6 o'clock at night. I have just come back from running. I'm also a marathon runner, right? And I just run 8 miles up there in the mountains, and wow, was it great. 6 o'clock at 6:30 at night, and there was a sunset, crimson red sunset, is redder than the seats you're sitting on. All of the evergreens standing at attention for this majestic sunset over the top of a 15,000-foot snow-capped mountain. I went, wow, look at that. Is that ever neat? This guy in the program looks around and he says, goddamn mountain's blocking the view. Thank God that we have the capacity to laugh at ourselves, but you know, that's you and I. That's you and I. How many times do we wake up and the mountains are blocking the view? No alcoholic automatically picks up a drink. Goes, tick. Oh, Billy Blue Blazers, what do you know? I just chuggled down some beverage. No, there's all kinds of telegraphing signs. Coffee's burnt. Toast is crisp. Eggs are greasy. Room's too full of smoke. Speaker's speaking too long. Wife doesn't understand. Boss is an idiot. Son's in the wrong. Everything goes negative. How are you? Fine. Negative. Always run by a whole bunch of negative reactions to things. No response. Response means capacity to answer. Capacity to make a free choice and answer. Respondere, that's the word. It's Latin, I think, yeah. Capacity to answer to life, to allow it to challenge us and to become part of the solution instead of becoming part of the problem. And that's what the steps are about. But we got to get into them. You know, I get so many people coming, I don't know what to do in AA. I don't know what to say. Did you read the big book? No. Did you read 12 and 12? No. Did you read the 24-hour book? No. Well, you never know, want to know what to say. If you don't put anything in the machine, nothing's going to come out. I mean, you know, until you're going to start experiencing life, it's got to be lived. It's got to be lived in the legs, in the guts. Life is an emotional response to situations in you find yourself at feeling level. It's not thinking. It's like wishing, you know. Well, I race sailboats. A lot of people think we're sailing. Wish the boat go over there. You don't wish it go over there. You go the other way. You're sailing over there. You can't wish life. A lot of alkies are like hitchhikers, sucking their thumb, wondering why they're not going anyplace. Why doesn't somebody pick me up? Why doesn't the phone ring? If Charlie would only change, then I'd be happy. Charlie ain't ever, maybe never going to change. How many people do you and I know who blame their misery on other people? Boy, I see that every day of my life. No freedom. Use your power of choice wisely. So, we get into the steps. The first step. It's not bad, eh? Little altar boy, he watched the priest do this in the pulpit, look at his watch. The altar boy says, what's that mean? Not a damn thing. Here it is, an hour, and we're only at step one. But my plane doesn't go till 6:45. I don't care. And as most alkies, I'm a night person. I have a hard time getting up in the morning. I have a hard time getting up at noon, but I can stay up all night. Most people's problem is they cannot love themselves. That's you and my problem. Carl Rogers, father of all American psychotherapy, he once said, hey, that's the problem. People cannot love them. And I don't mean standing there going, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? You are, you devil, you. Oh, no. Don't mean that. But be aware to the gifts that God's given you, the irrepeatable mystery of His love. If He was to come down right now and look in your eye, would He see the beauty of His creation, the twinkle of your eye? No. You're the only one who can change that. Now, if you had $1 million, it wouldn't make any. People say, just try me, though. You know? You'd be miserable. The best way of finding out, you know, happiness in life is finding out all the things you can live without. Because in some way we become a slave to all the toils, toys, things we put around us and everything else. And so that's what the program is about. This is a positive program. It's not a program of self-flagellation. Oh boy, I'm really going to make up for the times I goofed, you know. Jansenism. Jansenism was a heresy in the Catholic Church. 1505, wrote Portway Alfred. The more miserable I am, the closer I am to God. Huh. Some people still believe that. I must be a saint. Everything's going miserable. God really must love me. I'm miserable. It's not what He put you here for. His will for you is that you be happy, that you be joyful, that my joy may be yours and yours may be full. If it's not, how come? You have to take responsibility for your life. That's another great thing that's going on these days because of B.F. Skinner and Watsonianism, and all that means is that there's nothing I can do to change. The worst thing you can do to a human being is to take away their self-worth. The second worst thing you can do is to take away their capacity to change. So we're all changing. We're not the people we were even 2 weeks ago. And you're not the people you're going to be. Someday I'm going to be holy. And that's going to be a miracle. And so we deal with the first step, and everybody keeps saying, boy, I got to admit I'm an alcoholic and run through all these terrible things. Like, no! The first step is a positive, creative acceptance of your human condition to work out your human destiny in this plot of toil which has been given for you to kill. Positive, creative acceptance of your human condition is the fact that you are an alcoholic, is the fact that you are a member of an Al-Anon. Is that a positive, creative acceptance in your life? Does that make life more creative to make things? Does it make it more positive? You've got to ask yourself. No, you've got to ask yourself. You really got to sit down. Take a little time with yourself and say, am I happy? You're going to say, yeah, sure. No. Just really get serious. Well, no, I'm as happy as I'm. Of course I'm happy. I'm a priest. I work. Give yourself some time. See, everything in AA is not pious puffballs in the sky. Everything in Al-Anon is not pious puffballs in the sky. It's the internalization of the same program which must be moved into the guts to move the legs, which is demonstrable, measurable, behaviorable action. Am I joyful? Positive, creative. Okay, before we came in the program, just look at two columns here. Right? Thiebaud, the psychiatrist, first friend of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the act of surrender, I felt irritated. I felt pushed around. I felt ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt bitchy. I felt ill at ease. I felt negative. I felt remorseful, faithless, unworthy, no self-worth, rejected, What's the word I'm looking for? Negative. And then after we come in a bit, after the act of surrender, it's, I felt at peace, I felt composed, I felt joyful, I felt, hopeful, faithful, that life had purpose, that life had meaning, that there was a reason to live, that my presence did mean something, that I was loved, lovable, capacity to love, with the prayerful sense of medication. Meditation. Ooh, medication. Phew. Sought through prayer and medication now, right? Okay, which one? Which, really, which, when people say, I don't know if I've taken the first step, which, which column do you identify with? You know, I know some people, and every time you meet them, it's a crisis. I mean, oh, geez, Father, can I talk to you a minute? Oh, I just smashed my car up, my dog just bit somebody, and on. Well, it's frightening. The first step means that we finally say, I cannot do it my way. Every alcoholic and person living with an alcoholic, they adopt the same trends, have a fantastic sense of unstoppability, and that sense of unstoppability has to get stopped. And we have to not fight anymore. If there's any type of fighting, page 103. Well, I know it's there. It is. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody and anything. We have to. No more fighting. If we're still fighting, we're still trying to claim our own superiority over it. No more fighting. But there's got to be an act of surrender, which is a positive thing, so we can start seeing things positively. Listen to this. Everything that hits your gut negatively, every negative emotion that you and I have, and I got plenty of them, means we're perceiving reality wrongly. And we have to have the growing upness, at least the capacity to grow. Now, you're not going to like this, but all growth demands stretch marks. We have the capacity to say, hey, what am I seeing wrongly? Doesn't mean I'm never going to get mad. Of course you have. You have 11 human emotions in you. To be fully human and fully alive, all those emotions have to be working. And sure, you're going to get mad, but you can't get mad at somebody else. You know, how many times have you let mad at people and let them live in your head rent-free? And lose sleep over it. And beat up the kids and kick the dog and the dog goes bites the cat and all that stuff. The cat chases a rat and all, because someone's living in your head rent-free. You know what he did to me? The other person, I used to get drunk at the Pope. He was sleeping pretty good in the Vatican. That'd be, jail in Boston, Ottawa. Fixed his clock. Now, how many times we do that? What is it, Hamlet? I just read that today. Hamlet, Shakespeare, Brutus, my friend, the fault is not in the stars, but within ourselves. What's our basket full of? Is our basket full of resentment, revenge, paranoia, I'll get even, how could you do this to me? Fix them, I'll win, beat them, become number one. If that's it, it's all we're going to dump on the world. Or is our basket full of peace, freedom, happiness, serenity, joyfulness, capacity to love other people, to receive their love? That's it. You've got to figure out whatever I got's in me. And if I can't love myself, if I can't accept myself, if I can't make my alcoholism be a positive, creative acceptance of my own life and my family alcoholism, positive, creative acceptance of my own life, what am I going to dump on other people? Poor me. That's nothing. It's not me. It's just because the kids are getting screwed up a little earlier because they got the availability and they got more people digging holes of them, More people practicing conditional love on them. You keep your room clean. Why don't you pass your exams? Why don't you be like your brother? Why don't you be like somebody else? Why don't you do this? Why don't you stop picking your nose? Don't bite your finger.
You
know? No one's else saying go out. Nobody's saying give it a best shot. Our whole treatment program, very, very unique things that go on there. You know, I can't go through all that with you, but all of it is geared to making life more meaningful, purpose, rich, and fulfilling. And that's why there's six fire trucks, and that's why there's three St. Bernards, and that's why there's banjo bands, and that's why there's sailboats. Oh, fantastic summer. Fantastic summer. I just blew Michigan almost off the map. A guy lent me a sailboat, 42 feet long. Okay, the sailboat sleeps six people, right? You know how many I put on it? 15. And go for 3 days. Now, we got 15 people who are in treatment, and we put them on a sailboat, right? And you really watch starting people start relating then. Now, they have all been in treatment, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks, and I put them on there. Men, women, they'd come in a port in Michigan. Come in a port, people would die, right? Oh, because they tell me after, they didn't know, they'd watch a sailboat come in with 50. Now, I got blacks, Chicanos, Mexicans, girls, boys, everybody on the thing. Coming into a port, they say, oh, my God, call the police right away. Right? We had a fantastic time. We'd be in port an hour, and then they'd find out what was going on. Within 2 hours, everybody was at our boat, because we'd have the musicians, and we'd be the entertainers. Right? And all these people who had everybody said, you're no good, you're no good, you're no good. All of a sudden, they got the whole port entertaining them. They're watching people smile. They're watching people dance. And say, hey, we're making this happen in people's lives. See, we all have to go to 4 hours of classes a day in the center. I run the center, but I mean, I got all these people working for me, but it's run just like Hitler without the warmth. It is. It is. You're up every morning at 6:30, 7 days a week. Saturdays and Sundays. You go to school for 4 hours.
It is the only treatment center in the world. You got to work on Saturdays and Sundays.
I said, did you drink on Saturdays and Sundays? They say, yeah. It's okay, we work Saturdays and Sundays. Right? But you and I know we never learned it. How much do you remember what you learned in school? I was in school with all these degrees till I was 30. I don't remember a damn thing I ever learned in school. But I remember all of the other activities that I was involved in. Hockey and, oh, geez, football. I was even a boxer. All that stuff. Fine. It's very easy to sit in a classroom and say, let's go to a baseball game. I'd go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you've never been to a baseball game without a jug of wine or a case of beer or some pot or some pills, it gets to be a little frightening. It's like taking a fish out of the bowl and say, swim. So we go. Well, and that's what the whole boat was all about, and the sailing and getting up, do anything they want. Fantastic experiences, fantastic. Put the pedestals there and people start getting on them. Is life more meaningful because of the fact that I'm an alcoholic? Have I got the first step? Am I going around saying, I'm an alcoholic, oh, geez, bad news. Wake up! It's a program of attraction, not a scare tactic program. Kid, you're lucky, boy, that you got in the program when you were 23. You never even know what suffering is all about. I spilt more in my tie than you ever think. That's crazy. These young kids have been to hell and back much more than I ever have to suffer. Lordy, lordy, lordy. And that's it. You know, kids coming away, hey, screaming for something to believe in, hoping for something to believe in, you know. And what faith is at that stage in a person's life is the belief in the experience of other people. Put your feet under the table. Count up the hours, the days, the weeks, the months, the years, the decades of sobriety. That works. And all he needs is, give me some of this faith. And if he sits down at a meeting and somebody says, hey, you haven't even suffered yet, go back out and qualify. We get so smug. On my part of the country, I don't know, we're only getting 10% of the alkies come into AA anyway. We get so smug. Sit around there. Boy, we're God's chosen people. Don't let anybody else get part of the action. Right? I'm a cross addicted alcohol. Oh, cross addicted alcohol. That's terrible. I'm a purist. Everybody wants to be a civil. I'm a CIA, Catholic Irish alcoholic. All I drank was booze. Is life more meaningful? You know what the whole spiritual thing is? That you and I develop in AA and in Al-Anon enough solitude, enough self-worth, enough self-love, enough self-dignity. Take the time through the internalization of these steps and prayer so that we develop that solitude within us that you and I can accept the stranger coming as a bearer of gifts. That's a spine-tingling phrase. And it's easy to say. The words just kind of roll off.
But look around you.
Very easy for me to say that.
But to practice it. Maybe it's the 3rd, 15th, 20th, third time the person's coming at me. You know? Maybe I've given him my best shot 17 times. What are we supposed to do? How many more times do you go? One more time. I know guys give all kinds of AA talks. Oh, my God, they're so grateful about their new AA baby and their new AA house and their new AA job. And everybody's crying. They haven't talked to their wife in 6 weeks. That's not what responsibility is. That's not what allow life to challenge me is. You know, most of us want to push life out to where it's just a postage stamp. Or bing, we can handle it very easy. Quinn, fly in here, get on a plane at 6 o'clock, go play hockey, star of the Flying Fathers, right? Wow, I'm there for 3 nights. Now, the Flying Fathers is a very serious organization of 15 of the most brain-damaged loose loafers, one put on a curb, none of their elevators go to the top floor, Catholic priests who play hockey for charity. I've been their regular goaltender since they brought me up. I played my minors with the Little Sisters of the Poor. Since my stay with the Flying Fathers, I've played 400 games. I've lost 2. The reason is we cheat. We have Sister Mary Shooter on the team, and when things get rough, I put plexiglass in front of the net. In the last 2 minutes, if we're still losing, I pull out a football, throw a touchdown pass. It's worth 6 goals. We always win. Our last game gave a $45,000 check to the Cancer Foundation of Canada. We've raised over $2 million. These guys are absolutely nuts. No, but you don't do that by just wishing it either. You know, I'm big 5-0 this year. I've passed the half a century mark. You know, and I found out they're using a much smaller puck recently. I'm also a sometime goaler for the Chicago Blackhawk old-timers. Now, do you know how old the Chicago Blackhawk old-timers are? 32. Right? Bobby Hull, Dennis Hull, you know, Dale Talon, Chico Mike. I played with them 2 weeks ago. I couldn't see the puck. Blew 2 past me. And Pat Stable was like, "You want to move?" And I said, "Why? I didn't see anything." But yeah, okay, to do those things, you know, means you got to get up, and you got to get up early in the morning. You got to go to dumb rinks where there's no people in the rinks and practice, 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 practice. Now, I'm an alcoholic, and my caliber of play is directly proportionate to the number of the people in the rink. When there's nobody there, I couldn't stop a beach ball. But when there's 10,000, 12,000 people in the rink, well, the adrenaline gets going, and you eat it instead of letting it go by you, right? Very, very simple. This year, we go to Europe. Now, I've never been to Europe. The last time they went to Europe, they lost 4 priests and never found them yet. Right? We rig it so we can play all our games immediately, and then boys take off, and the skiers go skiing, and, you know, drinkers go drinking, and the prayers go to Rome. And somebody said, "Yeah, nobody's going to Rome, eh?" Right? Fantastic guys. And we don't live in the same city. They're, you know, everybody lives in, so we only meet in the dressing room before the games. We raised over $2 million for the game. You know, what are you going to do? You want that type of reaction in life, you know, and I get a lot of good pluses out of that because I'm openly identified as an alcoholic. I was playing in Duluth, Minnesota last year. I got a letter. "Father, I've been in AA for 5 years. My son's 14 years old. He has never talked to me since I've sobered up, and he thinks his mother is a drunken slut. And he's never been able to relate to me, and it's been very tense. But by God's providence, some type way, tonight he became the friend of the stick boy for the Flying Fathers, and we always pick kids in the neighborhood or in the rink to be our stick boy. And he came home that night, and he gave me a big hug, and he said, 'Gee, Mom, you know, it's really okay. You're just a drunk like Father Quinn.'" I get all kinds of stuff like that happening. Because when we're not on the ice, then we have to be in hospitals and schools. And my bag is mostly being in detox centers and things like that. Is life more meaningful, positive, because, you know, are you going around saying, "Nothing"? That's what it's about, you know. Faith. Faith means do the action first. I find so many people, you know, "God, help me, you know, do this, do that, God." And they hold up a hoop and say, "God, jump through this hoop and then I'll believe you're around. God, you prove to me that you're really involved in my life and then I'll start believing in you." And it doesn't work that way. The anatomy of faith is do something first and then it will happen.
That means get out of the driver's seat. Your way doesn't work. Take the faith, the belief, and the experience of other people. Keep going to the tables. Start believing in God. That means you start doing some action. If you don't want to do the action, nothing is going to happen. All of those steps, again, in the past tense, because the second step depends on the action of the first. Third step depends on the action of the second. And the action of the third is found in the fourth, all the way down. But if we're going to sit back in our critical way and say, prove it to me, we can't prove it to you. I can't prove faith to you, and you can't disprove it to me. But if you think it's the same as putting a piece of toast in the toaster when it's plugged in and think it's going to pop up in 2 minutes, or that it's like a calculator problem where you don't have to have any faith at all, no. You've got to have faith. You've got to take risks. You've got to come out of yourself and get rid of the self-preoccupation and say, hey, I'm going to start forgiving people. I'm going to start liking. I'm going to start loving people. I'm going to change. I'm going to do some positive things. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. Nobody has needed. We don't have any proofs. We don't have any guarantees what's going to happen. But if you keep sitting back and saying, I gave up an ounce of love and I got hurt, so I'm never going to give up another ounce of love again. You're dead. I see that happening. It's really tragic. You know, who the heck are you or who the heck am I in life that we don't have to take a few knocks, you know? And the knocks that we take is somebody really trying to get our attention, you know, to make us grow up and to live a more meaningful, purposeful life. Don't get geared in on the negative. I'm the last guy in the world that says, go around looking for a cross. You don't need to look for a cross. You know, we all got enough of them. But, you know, there's a sense to that thing. There's a sense to even some of the trials that we have to go through, which get us out of ourselves, kind of knock the omnipotence out of us. There's that little selfishness that we brought into the world. You know, I'm king, majesty the baby. You better do what I say. Why do we get mad? Yeah, then we get mad when somebody doesn't do exactly what we tell them to do. Faith, you know, even in my context as a priest, you know, Christ never performed one miracle on the face of this earth where people didn't demonstrate their faith in him first. You know, in front of Herod, in front of the Sanhedrin, in front of Pilate, even his own hometown. Now, you'd think the kid would get some respect in his own hometown. You'd think Roger Dangerfield had a problem, eh? Here, Christ has been raising the dead, the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf hear, comes back to his own hometown. They go, he's only the carpenter's son. They didn't accept him as the Messiah, as their Redeemer, or anything. And know what he did in his own hometown? Zippo. Nothing. Nothing. When his own life depended upon it, nothing. I'm saying nothing. Where people demonstrated their faith, yeah, he did things for them because he was moved in human suffering, compassion, compati, to suffer with. Not to impress, but he identified with their suffering. There's nothing on the face of this earth that you've ever suffered or experienced that God has not experienced either. But where they demonstrated their faith, he says, pick up your stretcher, walk, open your eyes and see, jump in the pool, get healed, lame walk. Okay, but if you and I here in 1983 say, prove it to me. Get my computer out, and if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to do it. We're going to be losers. We're going to be losers. And so we have to get out of ourselves. That means we've got to take a little faith. We've got to start believing in what people tell us. You know? Someone says, I love you. You can't prove that.
Yeah, prove it to me.
We know how to prove it, man.
Drip, man, Mick.
You can't prove that. You got to accept it on faith. But in our world, we have measurements. We want to measure everything. You know, I'm involved in professional athletics. We measure everything. You know, everything's on computer. Who made the most tackles? Who made the most runs? Who can run 100 yards? Brrr, boom, this is the guy we need. Might be a complete idiot, but don't care. Boom, the statistics say this is the guy we need. Third step. Where am I at? Am I at an hour and a half already? What's your watch say? Huh? What? Now, wait a minute. I'm all messed up. I say 9:30. 9:30. Is this this time or Detroit time? God wants you to be happy. Boy, I can't get that. You know, I'm going to give you a real deep theological mystery now, and people are not going to believe me. God cannot get mad. We're on the tape recorder, okay? God cannot get annoyed. God does not get ticked off at you. God does not get revengeful. God is not going to fix you. God is not going to get back. None of those things. None of them.
The only thing God can do is love. The only thing. Now, that sunshine is there. Now, if you and I want to walk into the barn, back into the deep, dark, damp, dismal dungeons of despair, that's our own free choice. And I do it plenty. And blame other people. But His sunshine's there. Or you wouldn't be breathing right now. Now, you know, instead of the sense, you know, this protestations or proclamations of protestation, what we really should be doing is making other people aware of the sense of the divine that's in them. Standing front of them and reflect back their beauty, their goodness, and unconditional love. Unconditional love means nothing deserves that. I mean, you don't merit it. God loves you unconditionally. Not because you're a good boy, a good little girl, because you kept the room clean, and never said the spit, and did this, and never did that, never did the other thing. You know, putting your gifts like we always want, you know, put our gifts on a pan scale. Someone else puts their gift. You take your gift away, I'll take mine away. No, all God is saying to you tonight is, I want you to remember me as forever loving you. Now, I meet a lot of people in AA say, I must be the dumbest, I must be the ugliest, I must be the weakest, I must be the stupidest, I must be the fattest, I must be the ugliest, I'm a negative, 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 negative. Boy, you don't ever screwed up like I screwed up. I mean, I screwed up like nobody screwed up, nobody could. You know what they're really doing? They're saying, there is no greater supreme being than me to forgive me, I'm unforgivable. Me and God are equal. I just got a letter from a hockey game that I played last year. Person cannot forgive themselves for something which happened 15 years ago. It's driven to them a hospital twice already. And what they're really doing is saying, there is no God greater than me, forgive me. I mean, I can't forgive myself. How can God forgive me? And so we anthropomorphize. Anthropomorphization, that's a big word. You know what it does? Put human limitations on God and just pretend He's another human being. And then we can walk around all of our AA life and all of our Al-Anon life saying, I'm negative, I'm negative, I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm skinny. And that's nice because we don't have to change. We never have to say, hey, God loves me. I better start growing up and responding. I better change. But we can get locked in our own little box that's all negative. And people will say, boy, is that ever honest? Boy, is that ever honest? Boy, that's an honest nuts. It happened 15 years ago. I haven't talked to his wife in 6 weeks. God loves you. No? And He is present in your life. God, every time we start talking about this, people start looking up, adoring God on His long white beard, on a pink cloud, and a lot of flaky angels coming, Hosanna, Hosanna, Hosanna. But to hell with you. To hell with you. Who needs you? Get out of my way. I'm getting God before He gets me. I don't need anybody. You know, we all think we're going to get God because we're going to deserve His love. We're going to deserve His love to get to heaven. No way, no way, no way. That's conditional love. Oh, God. See, I believe when you get to heaven, God's not going to say, how many times did you say spit? And how many times did you do this? And He's not going to say, He's going to say, where are your brothers? Where are your sisters? Because I gave you one law, to learn to love one another. To love one another. To always do what is for the person's happiness, development, security. When do we do that? Third step means made a decision. Did I like what was happening to me when I was drinking? Obviously, I gave you one little incident that happened 2 days after I drank. There were lots of others. I didn't like that. Nor did I like being locked up in the nut house. Now, that's 18 years ago. If I take another drink, I'm going to go back. No one's going to see me for 20 years. The hell with it. I'm not going for that long. I'm too selfish. So I didn't like, so that means I make a decision. That means I'm going to go to AA. That means I'm going to start continue to read this stuff. That means I'm going to study it. I'm going to take the time to internalize it. I'm going to take the time to do the things they suggest. Life's always changing. To turn our will and our care over to God, and somebody always, they want to hold the hoop up and say, God, you know, get me out of this scrape, get my job back, and then I'll start believing in you. No, no, no. God's will for you is that you be happy. God's will for you that you use your freedom. God's will for you is that you beware of those good things in you, that you get a piece of paper and pencil and you are able to put 10 good things down without. Now, I've never met a person go farther than 3. Sometimes they get to 5 and then they scratch them out. Because they won't talk at AA tables about those things. People won't talk about AA tables about, you know, the good things that are going on in them.
about gratitude and appreciativeness and love and thankful for the people in their life and thankful what God's given. Maybe talk about some honest things, like maybe they're a little lonely at times. They're kind of scared.
Because that's being weak. I mean, it's not macho to say I'm scared. Oh, right. Always got to be General Bull Moose. Hmm.
So we put God, you know, like another human being, and we say, oh, well, you know, after all I've done, he really can't do too much. That's anthropomorphization. That's limiting. That's not God. See, God is other. You've got to accept that. Right? Not us. And he is deeply involved in the things that go on in your life, or you wouldn't be here. And especially as members of AA and members of Al-Anon, he has touched you. Now, you might have all kinds of reasons why you're here. Well, after maybe 10 years, you'll start figuring out how come you're really here. You know, judge, your wife, or boss, or kids. You know, we all got those other reasons, right? Took me 2 years before I could even talk to the guy who locked me up. Now, I thought he was picking on me, because I knew other guys had worse records than me. And he was just picking on me, right? And then I finally got the picture. Maybe I'd call him. I called him June the 16th this year, and I think that was the 16th year in a row I've called him. Say, thank you, Father, for what you did. I now appreciate that, because I know it wasn't easy. And nor did you have any, you know, guarantees of what was going to happen. But because of the fact that you did that, and God's grace in the AA program, there's been 23,000 other people who have been given an opportunity to live a meaningful, purposeful, rich life. God's not some boogeyman. Well, he's a father who loves you. All I want you to do is remember me as forever loving you. Now, so many people live in fear. I sit at AA tables, people say God seems so inaccessible because they're still looking up there. You want to see recreated lives. You want to see recreated hearts. You want to see God's work. Start looking into each other's eyes. Instead of the yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, you know. Really. The most important law of the human mind is this. Appreciate somebody and that person will become greater to you. Belittle somebody and that person will become less to you. That's the whole reason of divorce. Appreciate somebody and that person will become more to you. Belittle somebody and that person will become less to you. It's the most important law of the human mind. But we get so caught up with all of these other things, you know. Beirut. Don't even know who the heck we're living with. Mountains are blocking the view. My world vision gets negative. And when that gets negative, that means I got to change. I got to stop and say, hey, Vaughn, what is wrong? What are you seeing wrongly? Your vision of yourself, your vision of the world, the vision of people in it, your vision of God. And that's what the third step is all about. God wants you to be joyful. He's not up there, you know, back hitting you on the head. He's compassionate. Kampati means suffer, to suffer with. That everything you've ever experienced in life, he's been with you. If you take the time to start figuring that out. In solidarity, or what we call suficere, which Latin means self-disclosure. You got to start opening up. You got to start, you know, being really honest, you know, in your relationship to God. You know, Martin Luther gave us the great, great, you know, insight. When you're praying to God, don't lie. You know, we kind of ruin prayers when we talk to, you know, printing presses and all that type of stuff. Prayer books, oh dear God, how happy I am that I'll do everything you want me to do. And inside we're steaming with anger and rejection and hurt and disillusionment. We're not being honest. We're not saying, God, I'm really hurting. And God, I'm really miserable, you know. Jeremiah the prophet, curse the day I was ever born. You made a fool of me. You wanted me to be a prophet and I stutter. At least he let it all hang out. He was very honest about those things, eh? See, God's not some type of a mystery up in the sky. No, if he wanted you and I up in the sky, he would have put us up there as angels to help him. But he put us here, and this is where we got to work out our destiny, right here. With the people we are with. Not the ifs and buts, maybes. If it was 10 years earlier or 10 years later, we missed the day. Stick with ego boosters. I don't know where this great inventory kick came, and I don't know how to turn that one around.
Everybody comes to treatment. They come to AA and they start sweating the fourth step before they even get the first one, before they even are detoxified. The purpose of the fourth step is to bring out the goodness in you, the lovableness in you, the joyfulness in you, the cheerfulness in you, the dignity in you, the godlikeness in you, the beauty, lovableness, appreciation that you are a special, distinct person, never to be repeated again. And all the trillions and billions of whatevers that have been created on the face of this earth, and yet people look at the fourth step and they say, well, boy, I've got to write all this negative stuff down. Back in 1959, in a Montreal hotel, I slugged the doorman. Big deal. What the hell's that got to do with 1983? And we got to write down, I'm the most worstest person. Now, there's people sitting in front of me right now saying, yeah, but, Father, no one's ever screwed up like I've screwed up. I mean, what I've done, nobody's ever done. That's false pride. That's that stubbornness. And if I was to put you on truth serum right now, sodium pentothal, you'd pop up, pop that one out. I would find 74 other people in this room say, yeah, you too, I did that too. I thought I was the only person who did it. But we all say, I'm the only one who did it. And this is going to go to the grave with me. And I want to hide it in the closet. We go around fear. And boom, put the belt up to here. And nobody finds out what it's about. And we live in misery. I go to AA groups, and there's AA groups inventory group every week. They got 600 pages of inventory. Why did I get up this morning? It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Why did I get up this morning? 3 pages later. Oh, yeah, I had to go to the bathroom. Very good. They've missed the whole day. That's not what this program is about. I mean, self-analysis for the purposes of self-analysis. Self-introspection for the purpose of self-introspection will tell you absolutely nothing about yourself. Keeping a diary will tell you nothing about yourself. The AA program is 5-7 steps to find out what makes you tick so you go back out and into your communities of relationships, marriages, and work, children, play, whatever. But I got to find out who I am, who I am, who I am, who I am. Whew, you're changing every minute. Don't ask that question. Ask the question, who's God? What makes me enthusiastic? We got so many people hung up on this inventory thing. It's terrible. Let me take your inventory. Well, I took my inventory. Oh. You know, every piece. Father, will you take my fifth step? You better bring a lunch. Oh, it's going to take... naked. What's life about? Have you been given the gift of life to beat up on yourself? Have you been given the gift of life to sit around AA tables and Al-Anon tables and start telling each other who is the most worstest thing that God ever created? Have you been given the gift of life to carry that on to other people?
Well, you better get honest with yourself.
Is that what attracts people to life? Is that what you see? Is that the way you want to live? I know people. I'm a priest. I get called to deathbeds. I've seen people who live the whole time, missed life completely, missed the trip. They have missed the trip completely, and they fight it to the bitter end. Because they've never lived, never loved, never laughed. They were too darn preoccupied with self. Sorry, can't talk to you. I'm busy writing my inventory. All right, you want me to help? Sorry, I haven't got... I mean in a world of one. I mean, separated from the proper object to love the good and to know the truth. We live miserably, alone. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows where you hurt. Nobody knows where you bleed. Nobody knows what the tender spots are. Nobody. You're totally isolated. Everything you do separates you from other people.
They don't understand.
Of course they don't understand. You never told them. They're supposed to be mind readers. We expect everybody else to have X-ray vision so they can see we're upset. Right? Totally caught up in ourselves. That's not what life is all about. Get out and live it and give it your best shot. So what if you make a mistake? You make a mistake. And your tummy's not going to fall out. Your heart's not going to stop. At least you get out there and give it. At least you've tried. You've lived. Maybe you've lost. So what? You tried. Better have loved and lost than never loved at all. Well... Sure, alcoholism is a disease, yes. It has a symptomatology of 44 things. That's what identifies it. Now, I could do a fifth step right now and involve everybody in this room. It would be just different times, different faces, different places, different names.
But alcoholism brings people into those behaviors. That's what we want to get rid of. So if they're there in the gut, get rid of them. So that you can know freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. Freedom means the way you relate to people. Openness, sufficiency, self-disclosure. Freedom means tenderness in the way I talk, in the way I look, in the way I listen, in the way I'm present, the way I touch. That's what freedom is. It doesn't mean I go skipping down, saying, I'm free. No. It means I'm not hung up by all of these other things. Oh, geez, imagine if somebody really gets to know me. Oh, my God, if somebody really gets to know me and they find out everything about me, oh, my God, they won't accept me, so I better not let them know because that's total self-annihilation, so I better build up walls and we're right back to the same game. Game. Psychological encounter between two people so you don't have to get to know each other. Go through the four steps. Find out what makes you tick. Do it as the book says. The opposite of fear is love. Okay, now what are your loves? You know. And then what do? People keep telling me, oh, God. Love to play the piano. When's the last time you played? 1971. Love flowers. When's the last time you had a garden? Well, 8 years ago. It means action. So that's what we're... Got to get them down. Like I flew on the airplane today. When they met me, I flew with a lady. She was 87 years old today. She had more spunk in her than I have. Right? Flying air with her puppy dog. Ask the stewardess if my puppy dog's okay. Self-centered down below. Where was I? Springfield. Long time ago, a guy said to me, sent me to the airport. This guy in AA, he's dead now. He says, go meet him. I said, how the hell am I going to meet him in an airport? I mean, Detroit Metropolitan Airport. He says, you'll meet him. He'll have a smile on his face. He'll be trying to help somebody. And by God, I went out to the airport and I picked him out like nobody's business. Right? Okay, have you seen people in an airport? They look worse than church on Sunday. They're really in pain. Pain! Oh my God, time. I should talk to you about time. We never take the time to help some stranger. So ever since he said that to me, I help people in airports. And because I have a collar on, they don't think they're going to get attacked. All I see are souls, anyway. So. Little black lady, a little black baby. Beautiful black woman. A little black baby. Baby was 2 weeks old. Right? She's in Atlanta. And you land, you get on buses, and you're driving around. God, I don't know what happens. She's going all the way to the airport. And she had a guitar. I said, let me take the guitar in the bag, and we'll get on. I said, what flight? She said, that's it. I'm coming up. You're on the ground. You're walking up the steps, and the flight attendant goes, and the lady's right behind me with the little black, beautiful baby. Right? And she's in the flight attendant goes, father plays the guitar. I said, I bought it for my kid. It took me 48 minutes to get a cup of coffee on that flight. I had red on the inside of my jacket, a red flag. She says, you're not supposed to wear red. I said, you never met a cardinal. Today she was 87 years old. Fantastic lady. Coming out here. No, 7 o'clock going out of school. Stays here for the wintertime. Goes back up to New York. And her puppy dog. So we had all kinds of interesting things going on. Anyway. What do you want to do with life? Want to walk around like, what a pain this is. Some kids come to me in treatment. Elderly people come to me in treatment. I say, how old are you? They say, I'm 40. I said, good, you got 30 years to go. God, don't remind me. It's the gift of life. I see death enough. I see it a lot because, I kind of lead a sheltered life, so I get called upon to do a lot of things. People want Father Quinn to show up at their bed, and I see when people have lived a meaningful, purposeful, rich life, unselfishly. To be unselfish, the cause of all of our problems are selfishness. Self-centeredness, that we believe is the cause of our problems. Self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of others. They retaliate. War! Power struggle! I'll fix you, get something on the person and hold it behind your back till they step in front of you. Slap! Oh, got them. Power struggle. In AA, it's got to be very different. It's got to be built on weakness, acceptance of our illness, disease. Total disarmament.
total disarmament. Total vulnerability.
I've been hurt once. I'll never open myself up to be hurt again.
Good. Come and see me and we'll take you to church. I'll bury you. I have some friends that are morticians.
You're dead!
I'll never be hurt again.
Yeah, you get hurt a lot. So what? You know? That's how you grow up, the little stretch marks. But you got to make some sense into it. It's there for a purpose. Find out what makes you enthusiastic. Find out what your hopes are. Find out what your aspirations are. What do you want? If they were doing a movie of your life, what do you would write the script to be? What do you want on the tombstone? You know what the tomorrows are? The tomorrows and the tomorrows of your life are what you're doing today, just a little more of the same. In the fifth step, you sit down with another human being and you say, this is me. This is me. Self-disclosure. This is what alcoholism cost in my life, in my marriage, in my life, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And these are the future things that I want to happen in life. Every action that's meaningful with the alcohol and the alcoholic family is positive action oriented to the future. God does not give one red hoot about the past. Really. So please, forget it. If it's bugging you, put it down, tell it to somebody, get rid of it. You're never going to live it again. I get so many letters. Nobody can forgive me for the things that I've done. That is totally wrong. We are all human beings. We are all sinners. We are all living in a broken human condition. We all need salvation. We need God's help. We need each other, you know. And every sin you've ever committed is a shortcut to love. Quit playing God. So we get in the fifth step and you sit down with people and you say, hey, this is me. And these are my aspirations, my hopes. This is what I want the script to be. This is what I want the tombstone to be. This is what I want people to remember. Okay, these are the things that mess me up in life, okay? Fine. Get rid of them. All God's saying is I want you to remember me as forever loving you. I don't care what went on in the past. When Christ walked into those disciples who promised that they would stay with him all his life, we'll never let you down. You're going to betray me. Never! And you know what happened to Judas Iscariot came, right? And Peter, he was a drunk. Peter was going to be the first pope. Woo, whoopee, you know, white shoes and all. I'll get an 8-horse chariot. Yeah. I'll never deny you. Oh, no. A little 15-year-old girl comes up to Peter and says, hey, Peter, you know him, don't you? She says, I never saw the guy before in my life. After they all denied him, the only one saved him, the teeny bubber, our Lord appeared to them, right? And they're all sitting there saying, oh, geez, Ma, look what they've done to our boss now. Did we ever get sucked in? We thought we were going to be the big leaders of this great army with nothing but power and money. And look at us now. We're all caught in this room dying of fear because if they come in this room, they'll decapitate us. Wow, what a mistake. Our Lord came into them and he didn't do what I would have done. You know, I would have walked into that room on Easter Sunday and said, where the hell were you guys Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock? Sure, throw a little salt in the wounds. It's not the people hurt us, no, not the lasses. Just people a little salt in the wounds. You know, I know people have been in the program 18 years, right? If you weren't an alcoholic, his teeth would be straight. If you weren't an alcoholic, you'd have enough money to send him to the dentist. You know, 18 years, the guy's been slugging it out, you know? Keep bringing it back. Don't ever let it go. That's not what our Lord said. And that's what he's saying to you tonight, especially the new people. Peace. Shalom. I love you, I understand. Now, if you can get out of yourself and your own self little preoccupation and start believing that, you know, and saying there is hope, which is a personal commitment to the not yet certain, I don't know how I'm going to die, but I've been doing this since 65 and it works pretty darn well and it looks like a lot of other people have and they look pretty darn well to me. Peace, shalom, I love you, I understand. Forget about all of the other stuff and say, hey, the future, positive action oriented to the future. What do I want my life to be? You know, if I want to be a carpenter, then I better start hammering nails and wood. If I want to play the piano, I better start practicing, right? Whatever. Don't wish it to happen because it won't happen. But live it to happen and it will. And the only way you're going to get good positive actions about yourself and start developing self-worth in which you are then able to practice unconditional love, that is not laying a whole bunch of demands on people, and start doing good positive action. Don't do the good positive action, you won't get the good negative, the good positive feelings. But do negative things and you'll go into depression.
And worry and self-pity. Do selfish things. More depression, worry, self-pity. Do things for me where I step on other people. More worry, self-pity, depression. What's the use? You know, what goes around comes around. Now start getting out of yourself and a little bit of service to other people, and that's what AA and Al-Anon is all about. And all of a sudden you realize that the sun's not, the mountains don't block the view so much anymore. And you kind of get a different world vision. I know a guy left Detroit 2 years ago because the sidewalks were too narrow. I mean, this guy was really getting negative. The dance starts at 10. Where's the band? I'm only at step 5, and there's 12 traditions, and then there's 12 concepts. I was telling him at the dinner table tonight, I can do it. I've done it because I was in a maximum security jail once, and of course, at that particular one I won't mention, but the only reason why they came to the AA meeting was to get the coffee, the donuts, and bitch about the wardens, and they heckled me in the first couple of rows. I thought, oh, baby, it's the last time you'll ever do that. 7 hours later, I quit. I says, I gotta go. Tie a knot. It's the last time you'll ever abuse this program. Said, now make sure you don't come for the coffee and the donut. But I do it. I can. Empty barrels make an awful lot of noise. Not really. All I'm saying is, hey, you want to have some fun in life? You know, the only reason why people do things repetitively is because it is rewarding for them to do. That's what alcoholism is, too. Also, if alcoholism wasn't rewarding for you in the beginning, you would not continue to drink. You remember the times where your wife or the Al-Anon said to you, if you're going to drink tonight, I'm going to stick with you drink for drink and show you what a fool you make of yourself, right? And after 5 drinks, they were messing up the living room, you know, the car. All you said was, geez, you know, amateurs can't stay with us, you know. Clean up your mess. Lordy, lordy, lord. You know, it was rewarding in the beginning. Then cellular tissue breakdown and the liver didn't oxidize at 8 ounces an hour, and then we start getting drunk on less booze, and then we start saying, hey, how come there's trouble? Can't be booze because I was the best drinker. And after 5 years, we said, okay, Father, I'll admit there's a problem. It's the wife. So we get a new wife and it'll change. You know, it sure changed. It got worse, right? Then after another 5 years, we finally admitted, yeah, we better stop drinking. Right? But now, if that life doesn't become more meaningful and purposeful, you know, unless it doesn't have, you know, the reasons that why we come into AA is because we're going to lose something, wife or liver or boss or, you know, job or car or pancreas or kids, so we come in. And after 4 months, that's got to change, so that at the end of the first year, the only reasons why we stay in because life is more meaningful, purposeful, rich, and fulfilling. And if we're still at the end of year one saying, boy, I'm a terrible person, and boy, you know, what are you doing for excitement? Nothing. You know. What are you doing to have fun? Nothing. Life's nothing but a big sandwich, or I gotta take a bigger bite every day. Valley of tears. Terrible. It's not. And the only reason why we do it again repetitively is because life is more meaningful. Now, that's up to us, you know. I can't blame that on anybody else but myself. Oh, nobody. If I want to go out and give it my best shot, give it my best shot. Hey, I do that all the time. I get a lot of criticism. Sure. I've got a philosophy, and I get kicked in the fanny lots of times, but I got a philosophy in life that if they're kicking me in the fanny, it proves to me one thing, I'm out front. And if they're running me out of town, I get out front of the runner and it look like a parade, right? Then I have 6 fire trucks and I can have my own parade anytime. But that's what it is, you know, and it's all here. But it means I got to take a little time. I got to pray. I got to take time for solitude, you know. Beautiful places to do it in. I wish I could talk to you about my treatment centers. They're fabulous. Fabulous. I got more stuff going on up there. I'm the world's worst banjo player, but I have a banjo band. Oh, it's fantastic. I always make sure there's 5 good banjo players on either side of me. I appear on television. Everybody thinks it's great. One guy even asked me, do you have rubber band strings or aerial strings, right? Music is great. Music's great. I love music. When's the last time you played? Oh, I haven't played 10 years.
How do you want to live?
Not
Program of attraction. And that's what it's all about. What gratitude is, again, in the action part of the program, I've got to skip a few steps here. I'll have you here all night long. You know, but the fifth step, when you take that fifth step, you finally sit down with somebody and say, this is me. Self-disclosure. These are my hopes, my loves, my aspirations. These are the negative things. Do not want them to happen again. This is the way I want to live my life. This is what I'm going to commit my life to. And I'm not doing that. Check me up on that. And say, this is me. This is where I hurt. This is where I bleed. This is where I cry. And for the first time in your life, I don't care if you've been in a Catholic seminary like I was for 10 years or whatever, 8, medical school. For the first time in your life, you're going to accept your humanity. And that means you're going to accept creaturehood. And creaturehood means automatically I've accepted a creator other than myself. And then I start learning something about forgiveness. Now, this is very profound. You can go to all the AA meetings in the world, all the AA roundups. You'll never know what I'm talking to until you sit down with somebody and say, this is me. And you realize that that person doesn't fall apart and their heart doesn't stop, you know. And you're just an alcoholic like all of us, or an AA member, Al-Anon member, all of us. They have to go through the four-step written, take them to somebody else, fifth step. Get rid of all of that hostility so it can be turned into hospitality so they can accept people coming into their life as a bearer of gifts. Boy, I talk about that at some marriage counters, and my God, I almost get shot. I mean, I'm not even talking about alcoholics, and you accept your husband as a bearer of gifts. What? Terrible. Every time I do a marriage, I make everybody in the church, you know, whose marriage, express their marriage vows again and tell each other that they love each other. Geez, guys, faint. Choke. Can't do it. You do that, you sit down with somebody, right? And then you finally accept your creaturehood. You accept your creaturehood and a creator other than you. And all of a sudden you know that there's such a thing as forgiveness at gut level. And you start smiling. Because then all of a sudden you get a sense of the divine origin that's in you. All of a sudden you get an awareness of the gifts. All of a sudden you get an awareness where things start pointing to something else. Trees become just more than trees. They become little signs which point things about who created the world. We had a beautiful drive down here today, and that's what I was thinking about. Flowers. Do you know why birds sing? Because they have a song. What is your song?
I haven't got one. Get one.
True. Well, you haven't got a song, I don't want to be with you. I stick with winners. For God's sake, stick with ego boosters. You do not need people around you saying, let me tell you what your inventory is. You know what I think you should do? You need me to do this, and you better do this, and you better do that. Blow it out your left ear. I know what's wrong with me. I got to live with me. I know better than anybody else. I don't need people coming up and telling me, this is what's wrong with you, this is what's wrong with you. And neither do you. You need people in front of you that's going to reflect back the beauty of God's creation in you, the twinkle of their eye, and you better start doing that to each other. You know? The world, and all of a sudden, you know, all the world needs is love, and we kind of look around and expect other people are going to come to us through an electronic machine. Next, we're going to think computers can give it to us. No. We've dehumanized just about everything, so I guess, you know, that's the next thing. You can only give it. You got to do it. See, if you haven't done those things which I'm talking about, you're never going to know what it's all about. You're still going to fight life, dredge through. You know how many hours I worked today? I'm the self-made man. It doesn't impress me one bit. I want to know how many hours you played today. You know, we've got to have play time so that we can come back to the real things in life and do them more enthusiastically. Be a little bit more aware of God's grace in our life. Be a little bit more aware of God's love in our life. And God's not up there. Start looking at each other's eyeballs. Commitment decisions. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about feelings and emotions and Hollywood and isn't it lovey-dovey and cozy-wozy and kissy-kissy, hug your face up. Decisions and commitments.
You know, you commit yourself to this program, you've made this world a better place to live in. That's an act of love. You commit yourself to Al-Anon, you've made this world a better place to live in. That's an act of love. The world becomes a better place because of that. And that's the greatest power in the world. That's the power that sets us free. The bond of faith which unites us, which is the AA and Al-Anon philosophy, and the power of love which sets us free. And that's what gets you to meetings. Have you ever had the opportunity to go to an AA meeting, walk in, and there's not another human being in the room? Think of that sometimes when you don't think you should go. I have. I've sent people where there's nobody and they died. Because it was raining. But gratitude, I think gratitude somewhere in the program, the amount of blood, sweat, tears, energy that I'm willing to expend so that other people will be instilled with an idea that I succeed because of the things that I am doing. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. The amount of blood, sweat, tears, energy that I am willing to expend to instill in other people a desire that I'm going to succeed because of what I am doing based on my action. Now, you might think gratitude means, dear God, how thanky I am for all the things you've given me. Praying is a love relationship to God, being honest with Him. Praying for other people. You hear, pray for your enemies. Yeah, but that means identify with their pain. Take their pain, their resentment, their hostility, the things they're dumping you, and really own it. Really make it part of yours. Really live with it for a while and start understanding it, how it got there, and then pray to lessen their load. So many people want to pray for their enemies and say, God, please fix that enemy of mine. Other, outside, different. Own that enemy's resentment, fear, the threats, hostility, misunderstanding. Let it become part of you and live with it for a while and live with it till you can really understand it and start offering it up. Say, maybe lighten the load. Maybe that person, you know, when sees you will not be responding the same way. Gratitude. See, before we came into AA and Al-Anon, our theme song was, I'll Do It My Way. The great, whoever wrote that song, Blue Eyes, didn't write it, but he sings it, My Way. And out of fear and self-sufficiency and all of the myths which we grow up with and narcissism, I don't need anybody, leave me alone. I remember saying words once to a priest who was sitting me down to talk to me, and I said, catch me if you can. I said those words 19 years ago, but I can remember them like icicles tonight, right? Because they caught me. And those guys stayed watching television. You know, nothing happened in their life. Thank God they caught me. I'd hate to be back there watching television. So what I am saying is you got to learn a way to live that means loving people. And that means, you know, old putt's going to have to get up at 4:30 in the morning or something to get me to the airport. That's what it's all about, you know? He'd rather be in bed. I'd rather be in bed. So what? You know, I got to go play hockey now. Am I going to win the hockey games, lose the hockey games? I don't. I'm going to win. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give it my best shot. I'm going to make a lot of people laugh. A lot of people laugh because I'm the chief clown. Being the goaltender, I'm on the ice all night long. And I'm going to make some money for charity. And they're going to, you know, lots of good things are going to happen. But I'm, you know, maybe they'll put the puck in my face. Well, maybe they will. I'll duck. How do you want to live? No, I could have said, I can't go. So all the rest of the team are watching that football, or they did watch that football game at Notre Dame today. Well, all the Flying Fathers are invited to go to football. Notre Dame lost, by the way. Yeah. Terrible. But I'll meet them. If I've done one thing, it's just, the, you know. See, I hate being the circuit speaker. Remind the newcomer that their recovery is not dependent upon people, but upon their union with God. He and the newcomer must walk hand in hand with God. Page 99, page 100, I know it's there. So it's not on people, but you know, it's the... Both you and the new person, there's another must. Must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. And that's what it's about. Joy.
Well, the dance started 15 minutes ago. I don't see anybody dancing.
But at least you got comfortable chairs tonight.
All right, I have another thing which I absolutely insist that you do.
Is there is to be no applause. No clapping. God, I am just a drunk sharing stories of what I have learned in AA. Not just stories, but experiences in the book. You know, and the worst thing that we do is we start, you know, making big personalities out of AA people. Now, if you want me to, you know, come as an entertainer, it's a different story. I'm not very good there. I can tell a lot of funny stories if that tape recorder wasn't on. I could.
Right? Please. Please. You know, there's an awful lot of suffering in this country. You and I are free tonight. We can learn, teach, talk to each other, listen, touch, and be tender. There's a lot of hurt going on in this country now because of Beirut. And what's the other place? I can't think of the name right now. Yeah, my own stepbrother's the High Commissioner of Canada down through there. Right? Awful lot. Why? People saying, why God? Why'd you do this? Why God? Why me? Why my kids suffering? Why? And yet you and I are in this room and we should be saying, why God have we been given the opportunity to be free? Sure, we got bumps to take, but you know, open up your heart and start accepting these strangers coming as the bearer of gifts. Get rid of the prejudices, get rid of the hates, get rid of all that crazy stuff we learn, and learn that life is an experience in the future. You know, so after I stop talking, we pass baskets around? No? Jeez, this is even a Catholic place. I've never seen so many people together without a collection. I thought you'd at least do some religious and pick up a collection. But you are going to play bingo, I read someplace, so there are Catholics here, I knew it, right? Well, what's after me, the Lord's Prayer? Immediately? Okay, after I stop, then it's the Lord's Prayer, and no, none of this applause stuff. I take great exception to that, because this is a gift, and you know what happens? All of a sudden, you start believing you're the cause of the gift. And that's when omnipotence comes back in, and it makes my life much more miserable. You know, I get jealous now, and when people don't have to extend parking lots when I'm showing up to talk, you know. And if they can't fill Pontiac Stadium with 83,000 people, I don't think I'll go, you know. No, I'm just kidding about that. It's a gift, and you and I got the gift. You got the same gift I've got, even if you've only been around one day. So I quit with a poem which I stole from Father Joe Martin. And once I was giving an AA talk, and I said, there's a poem here that I got from a priest who's a little more famous than I am. I forgot his name. Like hell, I forgot his name. I just wouldn't say it. And in the mail, about a month later, I got a T-shirt that said, who the hell is Father Joe Martin anyway, right? So Father Joe Martin came to visit me in Detroit, and I had that T-shirt on under my bib, and I showed it to him. He thought it was great. When he left, I took it off my back and threw it in the car window, and he drove off with it. So we do this, and then you pray silently after. I do not wish you joy without a sorrow, nor endless day without the healing dark, nor brilliant sun without the cooling shadow, nor tides that never turn against your bark. I wish you faith, hope, love, strength, wisdom, good gold enough